Recording started.
Good morning and welcome to our Good Friday gathering as we truly look to honor the divinity and the humanity of the teacher we call Jesus or Yeshua. Truly, he is one of the greatest men, teachers, extraordinary spiritual beings that ever walked this earth. To teach, to show us, to demonstrate by example throughout his very short and brief ministry of 3 years, he never failed to teach and share that he was not the exception, that we each had this inner connection to the divine within. And today, I want us to look at, even at the very end of his life, he was still demonstrating and teaching by example how we can be living. But I'd like to start this morning with a beautiful reading I came across by hero monk Damascene entitled Christ, the Eternal Tao. To be empty is to be filled. Follow me, says the way. Descend into the valley. Enter the city. And then be raised up with me. Torn, dragged down, atop the highest tree, on the highest hill outside the city. Follow me, says the way. Hollow, empty, selfless, resting in forsakenness. There, abide in me as I abide in you. Follow me to where the lowly one waits, abandoned in the bowels of the earth, then up the valley path. We reach the flat land, and their hearts burn when they see us, mounting the clouds of heaven. We climb to where no man has yet climbed and come to a gate no man has yet entered. I have shown you the way, and I leave myself with you. The world laughs. It is wise and prudent, but I am made foolish and I weep. But see, in this realm where no man has gone, which no man can glimpse, I have opened the mysterious gate to you. Enter into my joy, you who have tasted my pain. Abide in the highest, you who have been abased in the depths with me. Be filled with me, you who have emptied with me. Be renewed, you who have been tattered with me. Taste in corruption. The way has been opened. History has been renewed. The way of return has been effected. The groaning earth waits for you to see that you need to wait no longer. That was the Christ, the Eternal Tao, by hero monk Damascene. This period of Lent that we have been journeying on, it's been a journey of emptying of the self, the diminishing of the egoic nature, and the lessening of the little me, so that truly we can have the experience of crossing out and crucifying all that no longer serves us, that we may resurrect into the light and truth of who we are and whose we are, as sons and daughters of the Most High God. I know for many that the Lenten period has simply been a moment of abstinence from chocolate or pasta or potatoes. But truly to embrace this Lenten period has been a not just giving up of some food, but a giving up and a relinquishing of the thoughts, beliefs, and the limitations that have held us down. So this morning, as we take this time to truly deepen in spirit, as we take this time to delve deeper into the story of the crucifixion, I invite you just to keep your hearts and minds open and allow the spirit within you to help you have the crucifixion experience, where you too can crucify that which no longer serves you, that which truly needs to be nailed to the cross. So I want to set the scene before we get into the seven statements of Jesus on the cross. And so we all are familiar that he went up to have the Last Supper, which would have been yesterday with his disciples. Here was this beautiful, wonderful man who knew what was about to happen to him. And all the time he knew who was going to betray him. I personally believe that they had a contract, that before they incarnated, because Jesus was always clear in saying that he'd been with God since the beginning of time. And his statement before Abraham was, I am. And so I believe he made the contract with Judas that when they incarnated on earth at this time, that Judas would have the most reviled role in the history, where he would be the most hated man for all time for betraying the Christ. And I believe he asked Judas because Judas was the strongest of all of the disciples to take on this role, because if there had been no betrayal, there would have been no crucifixion. If there had been no crucifixion, there'd be no resurrection. So I believe that Judas, with his love for the Jesus, the Christ, took on the role to be the betrayer. And you see, throughout he refers to Judas as his friend. He puts him in the highest role of looking after the well-being of all the disciples and fixing and organizing and sorting things. So we have moved beyond the Last Supper, where Jesus has already washed the feet of his disciples, demonstrating how great it is to serve. That even he as the teacher was not too much or beneath him to get down and wash their dirty and dusty feet. Again, teaching and demonstrating by example that service. No one is above service. He sends Judas off to do what he has to do. And he goes with John and James and says, come with me. And went to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to them, sit here while I go over and pray. And even as he does so, he starts to feel deeply sorrowful. He knows what is before him, and his soul is so overwhelmed. He says to them, stay here and keep watch with me. You're my friends. You're my disciples. You're the ones that I have been with you, continuously showing and teaching you. Stay awake with me and help me prepare for what's before. He goes on a little further. And he falls to the ground with his face and prays, Father, if it's possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. His humanity, recognizing, yes, he is here to do God's will. However, the thought of what is before him is too great. But still he is saying, if you will it, take it away. But if it's to be, then I will accept that. He returns to his disciples and found them sleeping and asked them, can't you just keep watch with me for this 1 hour? Just watch and pray so that you do not fall into temptation, for truly the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. He goes away a second time and prays the same thing, Father, If it's not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done. Again, the recognition of what's about to happen is so horrendous and so tormenting him. But yet he knows what he's here to do and says again, if you can't take this away and I must do it, I will. He comes back again and finds them sleeping still because their eyes are so heavy. He leaves them once more and goes back and prays for a third time, saying the same thing. You are going to see how the number three features continuously through this experience. He comes back to the disciples again and says to them, you're still sleeping and resting? Okay, well, the hour has come, and the Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of his enemies. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer. While he's still speaking, Judas arrives with a large crowd armed with swords and clubs. And he's already arranged with the chief priest and that the one that he's going to kiss, he's the one that they must arrest. And so he goes up to Jesus and greets him, Rabbi, and kisses him. And Jesus says, do what you came to do, friend. Such was his love, such was his compassion, that he knew that what Judas had to do was part of the plan and could still greet him as friend. The men step forward to seize Jesus and to arrest him. And those that were with him took out their swords and cut off one of the high priest's servant's ear. And Jesus said, no, put your sword back in its place. For all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Don't you think that I could call my Father and he would send me a legion of angels at my disposal? But this is supposed to happen. And he heals the servant's ear. So in that hour, Jesus says to the crowd, am I leading a rebellion that you have come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I sat in your temple teaching you, and you didn't arrest me. But this has all taken place, that the writing of the prophets may be fulfilled. Then his disciples fled, left him. Not a few hours earlier, they all swore that they would never leave him. When Jesus said at the Last Supper, one of you will betray me. No, we won't. We will be with you. No, we will die with you, said Peter. And Jesus tells him, no, you will betray me. So Jesus is taken now before the Sanhedrin. Caiaphas is the high priest and the head of the teachers of teaching the law. And all of them and the elders were assembled. Peter follows at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest. He sat down to watch from a distance what would be the outcome. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for false evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death. But they couldn't find any, and even the witnesses that came to give evidence and lie couldn't even agree and get their story straight. One said, oh, he said he will destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. And then another said something else. And the high priest stood up and said to Jesus, are you going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you? But Jesus remained silent. I am always mindful of this lesson, one of the greatest lessons ever during this period. Jesus could take all the accusations and the false statements made against him and not answer or speak a word. How many times have we encountered where someone has said something falsely to us, about us, and we so are enraptured in our needing to be vindicated. We are so caught up in our egos wanting to say and show that we were wrongly accused or how we've been falsely accused. But Jesus remained silent through it all. Even no matter what they were saying, he remained silent. And you know that the priests are even getting more angry because he's remaining silent. And the high priest said to him, I charge you under the oath of the living God, tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God. Now Jesus replies, you have said so. But I say to all of you, from now on you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven. The high priest tore his clothes and said, he has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? Look, now you've heard the blasphemy. What do you think? He is worthy of death, they answered. Then they spat on his face and struck him with their fists. Others slapped him and said, prophesy us, Messiah, who hit you? Now Peter was out in the courtyard, and the servant girl came up to him and said, you were with Jesus of Galilee. No, I wasn't. I don't know what you're talking about, he said. Then he went out to the gateway where another servant girl saw him and said to the people there, this fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth. He denied it again with an oath. I don't know that man. After a little while, those standing up with Peter said, surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away. Then he began to call down curses and swore to them, I don't know the man. Immediately a cock crowed, and Peter remembered the words that Jesus had spoken. Before the cock crows, you will disown me three times. And he went out and wept bitterly. Now early in the morning, all the chief priests and the elders of the people made plans as to how to have Jesus executed. So they bounded him and led him away and handed him over to Pilate the governor. When Judas, who had betrayed Jesus, saw that he was been condemned, he was seized with remorse and returned the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and the elders. I have sinned, for I have betrayed innocent blood. What is that to us? They replied. That's your responsibility. Judas threw the money into the temple and left, and then he went and hanged himself. The chief priest picked up the coins and said, it's against the law to put this into the treasury, but since it's blood money, so we'll buy a field and use it as a burial place. Meanwhile, Judas stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, are you the king of the Jews? You have said so, Jesus replied. And when he was accused by the chief priests and the elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate said to him, don't you hear the testimony they are bringing against you? But Jesus made no reply, not even to a single charge, to the great amazement of the governor. Now it's the governor's custom at the festival to release the prisoner chosen by the crowd at that time, and they had a well-known prisoner whose name was Jesus Barabbas. So when the crowd had gathered, Pilate asked them, which one do you want me to release, Jesus Barabbas or Jesus who is called the Messiah? For he knew it was out of self-interest that they handed Jesus over to him. While Pilate was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent him this message, don't have anything to do with that innocent man, for I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him. But the chief priests and elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas to have Jesus executed. Which of the two of you do you want me to release to you? Asked the governor. Barabbas, they answered. What shall I do with Jesus who is called the Messiah? Pilate asked. And they all answered, crucify him. Why? What crime has he committed? Asked Pilate. But they shouted the louder, crucify him. When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead an uproar was starting, he took and washed his hands in front of the crowd. I am innocent of this man's blood. It is your responsibility. All the people answered, his blood is on us and our children. And then he released Barabbas to them, but then had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. Again, three times Pilate asked for them to release Jesus. So the soldiers took Jesus away. They took him to the praetorium and gathered the whole company of soldiers around him. They stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him, twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on his head. They put a staff in his right hand and knelt in front of him and mocked him. Hail, King of the Jews, they said, and spat on him and took the staff and struck him on the head again and again. After they had mocked him, they took off the robe and put on his own clothes and led him away to crucify. As they were going out, they met a man from Syria named Simon, and they forced him to carry the cross. They came to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. They offered Jesus wine to drink mixed with gall, but he refused it. And when they crucified him, they divided his clothes by casting lots, and sitting down, they kept watch over him. Above a head, they placed the written charge against him: "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." And so now we'll take up where this morning's message is about. So Jesus is nailed on the cross on the third hour, which is 9 a.m. And on either side of him are also crucified two other people, thieves. One to the right of him and one to the left of him. Charles Fillmore says that the thief to the left is the past, and the thief to the right is that of the future. The thief to the left says to him, "If you are the Christ, why don't you save us and save yourself?" The thief to the right says to him, "Do you not fear God, because this man is innocent? This man hasn't done anything to be here. We have done something, and we are here rightly so." He is the first person to have defended Jesus. Not his disciples, who he spent all the time with, teaching, sharing, showing them how to heal, how to bless, how to connect with the divine within them. They had all ran and scattered. Peter, who was the disciple, he said, "You are my rock. Upon you I will build my church." He denied him three times. But here was a thief on the cross, acknowledging that this man was innocent and should not have been there. And so as Jesus is there on the cross, the first thing he says as he is nailed, he says, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. He has been beaten, scourged, whipped, assaulted, spat upon, and then had nails driven through his flesh. And the words that come out of his mouth, first and foremost, is, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." I have always felt and believed it is the act of this forgiveness that allows Jesus to be able to resurrect. If he had not had the capacity to be forgiving, to forgive those that had whipped him, that had falsely accused him, that had beaten him, he could not have ascended. He could not have resurrected. Holding on to or withholding forgiveness would have kept him, if not physically nailed to the cross, but physically in the tomb. But his compassion is so great that the first thing he is asking is forgiveness for his accusers and persecutors. I always think to myself, if Jesus, who came to this earth, who showed us such love, such compassion, who healed us, who taught who we are and whose we are, and who said, "You too can do all that I'm doing, because I go unto my Father," showing us that if we go unto the Father within, we can heal, we can transcend, we can have that Christ experience. Forgiveness is key to living a life of freedom. There is nothing, nothing that cannot be forgiven. There is no one who should be excluded from your forgiveness. It's not to say that forgiving and forgetting is easy. But what I'm saying is that forgiving and forgetting is necessary. Until you do, there will be forever this invisible cord that will bind you to the situation, to the condition, to the experience, to the circumstance, to the person to which you think forgiveness should be withheld from. John O'Donohue says, forgiveness is one of the really difficult things in life. The logic of receiving hurt seems to run in the direction of never forgetting either the hurt or the hurter. When you forgive, some deep divine generosity takes over. When you forgive, then you are free. When you cannot forgive, you are a prisoner of the hurt done to you. If you are really disappointed in someone and you become embittered, you become incarcerated inside that feeling. Only the grace of forgiveness can break the straight logic of hurt and embitterment. It gives you a way out. You begin to see and understand the conditions, circumstances, or weaknesses that made the other person act as they did. You see, the teacher Jesus, throughout his ministry, taught forgiveness. When Peter said, how many times should I forgive? Seven? As if that was a huge number to forgive someone. And Jesus said, no, not seven, but 70 times seven. Meaning that the act of forgiveness is endless. He tells us too to love our enemies, to bless those who curse you and persecute you and hate you and pray for them that spitefully use you. Such was his compassion. Such was his love. Such was his demonstration of forgiveness. Because he tells us that God, the infinite, the source of all that is, makes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust, and the sun to shine on the good and the evil, showing that there is no unforgiveness in God. Because God Almighty could, if that was the case, make the punishment on the just or unjust or the evil. And so forgiveness is key the Easter resurrecting experience. Forgiveness was the first words that he said on the cross, the statement number one, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. When people do things that are hurtful, that are painful to us, they're doing it from a place because they don't know any better. They're doing it because it's ignorance that has caused them to do that. As we forgive them, we set ourselves free. And forgiveness is not only for things or people, it's also for ourselves. There are going to be times when we need forgiveness of ourselves because we behaved in a way that we're ashamed of, because we believed something that we shouldn't have. Whatever, we need to be able to forgive ourselves as well. So truly, our first statement that Jesus gives on his cross is a lesson for us, is to forgive, for they know not what they do. Really, the truth is behind all offense, all misunderstanding, is the fact that people don't know what they're doing. I cannot believe if they did, they would still continue to do it deliberately. The second statement, he says, is to the thief, to the right of him. Now Jesus only spoke once to Caiaphas, once to Pilate, and now he speaks again. After the thief on the right tells off the thief on the left, he says to Jesus, remember me. Remember me when you're in your kingdom. Remember me. And Jesus says, today you will be with me in paradise. He's on the cross, bleeding and suffering, but yet he can still take time to show compassion and give attention to the thief on the right. And to tell him that it isn't that he has to wait. Today, in this moment, he will experience paradise. Throughout his teachings, Jesus said that the kingdom of God is right where you are, is here now. The kingdom being all that is good. The kingdom being love and truth and peace and joy and beauty. And he's telling the thief that today you will experience that. You haven't got to go through hell or purgatory. Today you will be with me in paradise. There is nothing that our beloved teacher and way shower, there was nothing even on the cross, there was nothing that would stop him from not still reaching out and showing that compassion. Throughout his ministry, he showed and demonstrated that compassion for others. When he was teaching on the mountainside and realizing that the people would be hungry, he found someone that had a few loaves and fishes and blessed it and fed them because his compassion was such, he didn't want them to go home hungry. He was there speaking with friends when people took off the roof and lowered their sick friend, and he healed them. His compassion was such that when the centurion said to him, I'm not worthy to have you in my home, but just say the word, I know my servant will be healed. He spoke the word. There was nothing outside his compassion and love for each and every one of us. That there on the cross, bleeding and in pain, he could still comfort the thief to the right of him. He could still show the compassion that is true of his nature. And reminding us that in our pain, in whatever we're going through, we can still have compassion for others. We don't need to be so caught up in ourselves and what's going on with our story that we exclude other people. Jesus demonstrated again by example. Demonstrated again by example that no matter what you're going through, you can still have compassion for other people. And that's the thing about the thief on the left that represents the past. If we stay there forever thinking about how it used to be, we will be robbed of joining the paradise in this moment. Jesus is always showing us how to be more spiritually aware, how to be conscious that the divine, the omnipresent, the omnipotent God is in this moment. Today, you're with me in paradise. We don't need to be concerned even about projecting into the future, worrying about the future, concerned about what will happen and how it will happen. Again, on the cross, he's teaching us in this moment, heaven is here. The kingdom of God is here. Today, you're with me in paradise. The third statement he makes on the cross, he looks down and sees his mother Mary at the bottom and says to her, woman, behold your son. And says to his beloved disciple John, behold your mother. Whilst it was the tradition to be able to look after your parents, he knew that he was no longer going to be able to do so. And so he now is uniting his beloved mother with his beloved disciple. And it is this thing, he says, see your son, and says to John, see your mother. Teaching again by example, demonstrating it's beyond just the blood that joins us. We are one family because we are of the one spirit. We have a responsibility for one another. to care, to love, to look after one another. It's not just because I was born of you or you came forth from me, but no, we have a responsibility to love, to care for, to treasure, to cherish each other. Here on the cross, he looks at his mother and he looks at his disciples and gives them the responsibility of each other to the other. It wasn't just because he was the Savior. It's because, again, he's giving us the lessons. Showing with his humanity and his divinity how we can live the life. His fourth statement on the cross. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? I thought long and hard about this statement. And I realized that he knew that God had not forsaken him. He knew that he was fulfilling his destiny and his purpose for which he came to this earth. But what he's showing us is that in every situation, any condition that we are facing, we can cry out to God. We can remember that God is there, always present, and always available to help us, to show us, to guide us, to direct us to a different way of being. He hadn't, not for 1 minute, believed that God had forsaken. But yet, still on the cross, he is teaching and showing us, even to the very end, that God is there. And there isn't a need to which we cannot cry out and ask for help or ask for guidance and know that God will hear and answer. His fifth statement, he says, I thirst. I thirst. He's handed up on a sponge a mixture of wine and myrrh, gall, in some descriptions they say. And some people say it just was a vinegar wine, and some people said it was something to alleviate the pain. But I believe, again, he's demonstrating that as soon as you declare you have a desire or a need, it is met. As soon as he said, I thirst, the need was met. They handed him the sponge soaked in the vinegar wine and gall. Our needs are met as we declare what the need is. Our teacher, our way shower, our Jesus, even on the cross, was demonstrating that our needs are met. He said, ask and you will receive. Knock and it will be open to you. Seek and you will find. So our needs are always being met. As long as we are aware that there is a need, and as we are aware of that need, state what the need is. He says, I thirst. The need was met. You can declare for yourself, I am healthy, and let that need be met. I am an abundant, let that need be met. I am whole, let that need be met. I am at peace, let that need be met. Again, our teacher is showing us there was no delay. In making that declaration, I thirst, the need was met instantaneously. Such was his belief. Such was his faith. And as always, he is demonstrating that according to our belief, be it done unto us. Even there up on the cross, nailed bleeding, having been beaten and scourged, he's still demonstrating the truth he shared with us in his 3 years of ministry. There is such a deep expression of his faith. But he says, even if you have a mustard seed, something as tiny as a mustard seed of faith, but do not doubt. And say to the mountain, move, it will move. Here, nailed to the cross, he is still teaching us, still showing us by example that we too can crucify all that needs to be crucified in our lives. We can cross out all of the things that have held us down, the false, limiting, erroneous beliefs, cross them out. Cross out the I'm not enough. Cross out I'm not clever enough. Cross out I am broke. Cross out I am sick. Cross out all of the things that truly do not serve you as a son and daughter of the Most High God. He has showed us throughout his life and even unto death that we have within us the abilities to rise and transcend and to know the truth of our being. His sixth statement on the cross, he says, it is finished. Everything that goes on in our life is a circle. It's a cycle. Everything has an end. Everything has a beginning and everything has an end. He realizes that he has fulfilled his role for that which he came. He realizes that he has now completed the assignment given to him. He now declares it is finished. We can look at some of the painful experiences in our life, look to what it brought us, the lessons we've learned, or should have learned, or can still learn. We can look at the experience and the relationships and the victories and the defeats, all which has been part of our evolution. And we can recognize that that was part of for us necessary for our growth and unfoldment. And we can recognize that it's finished. That part, that situation, that condition, that experience, it is finished. Gather the lessons. Gather what it is that was needed for the growth. And leave all that is unnecessary, unhappy memories. Leave it behind. Jesus doesn't take with him on that cross all that has occurred leading up to them wanting to stone him, having to run and hide with people of his own village, not believing who he was. There were places he couldn't do the miracles because he said a man is without honor in his own village. He left all of that, all of those experiences, all of those bitter memories, and was able to say, it is finished. Recognizing what was before him now. Holding no grudges, nursing no hurt feelings. Ready for the next step. The seventh statement he says, on the cross, Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit. In the beginning, God, and in the ending, God, God is our all in all. And Jesus went through the complete cycle to which he had accomplished exactly what he came here to do. And he brought that cycle to a climax with the crucifixion. And he chose to just end it with verbalizing, Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit. So often we want to know what's going to happen next. We want to see our life plan laid out before us. I've often said that God knows me well and only gives to me as much as I can handle in that moment. But because I do trust and rest upon God, I know that whatever he gives me to do, he will give me the strength to do it. He will give me the wisdom and the understanding with which to bring it forth. And so I don't need to know how everything is going to unfold. I don't need to know what it's going to look like. Because God has given me something to do. God will be with me in the beginning, and God will be with me at the end. Jesus is, Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit. It's not a cry of defeat, but a cry of victory against his final example and teaching to us, that we put everything into God's hands and let God do what he does best, or what she does best, knowing how to truly give us a resurrecting experience. And we'll talk about that on Sunday. Jesus, even unto death, was showing us and teaching us still. His final words was committing the next step to God. Whatever was to come next, God will direct it. Reminding us that we, as we surrender our spirits to God, God will direct our path. God will make the crooked path straight. God will direct us. And so, these seven statements of Jesus on the cross are still pertinent for us today. They are still necessary for us to embrace and live the life that we were called to live. Throughout his ministry and up to the crucifixion, he has been teaching us and showing us how to live the life we were born to live. So now let us think about what needs to be crossed out and crucified in our lives. So I invite you, if you haven't already, to close your eyes. And as always, just bring your attention to the breath, the gentle inhalation and exhalation, the ebbing and the flow. And just take a really deep breath in and slowly release it out. Take another deep breath in and set the intention to truly release anything that may be distracting. And take your final deep breath in, slowly exhaling out. And I want you for a moment to think of the things that need crossing out in your life. What needs to be crucified and nailed to the cross, not to be taken back again. What beliefs, what experiences, what health or physical or financial challenges needs nailing to the cross now? This Good Friday, let it be an experience where you crucify, where you cross out, where you nail to the cross all that which no longer serves. Those false beliefs that you've held about yourself still. Those erroneous ideas about lack and limitation. Oh, and let's not forget fear. Fear which takes its shapes in many forms. Time to nail that to the cross. Crucify that. That has no place in your life. It is written that God did not give us the spirit of fear, but of love and power and of a sound mind. So let us cross out anything and everything. Let us crucify that which is not for our highest good. Take a moment and crucify all of these things now. Let this Good Friday experience be one that truly eliminates anything that is holding you back or holding you down. The teacher Jesus said, "I came that you might have life and have it abundantly." Abundant peace, abundant joy, abundant harmony, abundant love, abundant life. Crucify now anything that is stopping you from experiencing the abundance that Jesus talks about. Because God did not put you here to suffer. He told you that it is the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom, all that is good. That's why he said, "Today you will be with me in paradise." Today you will experience the good that God has in store for you. As you truly embrace forgiveness, the first words on the cross, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Check your heart, check your spirit to make sure you have forgiven everything and everyone, so that you can have your Easter resurrecting experience. Know that as you thirst, your every need is met. Know that for the situations or conditions that you may have experienced, say, "It is finished." and know that you can commit your spirit to God. For God holds, God keeps, God sustains, God nurtures, God blesses you. So let this Good Friday experience be one where you have crucified all of the shortcomings, all of the limitations, all of the fears that you have nailed them firmly to the cross. So that you may resurrect as the light, love, God being that you are. Take another deep breath. As we come to the end of our Good Friday experience, I invite you just to stay in this energy and allow all that we have shared to truly percolate and permeate in your consciousness. To prepare yourself in readiness for Sunday's resurrecting Easter experience. Remember Jesus on the cross. Loving, forgiving, and caring for each and every one of us. And may you take that with you this day and every day, so that we, as joined heirs with Christ, truly live and love as his example showed us. And so I think it appropriate that we end with our prayer of protection. So I will unmute the phones now. Well, I think we'll have no unmuting today. Okay. And so if you repeat after me our prayer of protection, the light of God surrounds me. The love of God enfolds me. The power of God protects me. The presence of God watches over me. Wherever I am, God is. And all is well. I look forward to joining you, my beloveds, on Sunday for our Easter celebration, for our Rev. Ng Sunday Soul Connection. Have a blessed and beautiful Good Friday. God bless.